after 8 o'clock Sunday morning. You are listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. Flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. Today is the last time I will ever refer to them as that, even though they'll be that forever. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here every Sunday at the same time, live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. Also in studio directly in front of me on your radio dial, Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent and Out of Line producer, among many other duties, Chris Magnum Chapman. And roaming around the studio with camera full. Actually, he's not. I mean, he was roaming around, but he's got a tripod sitting in front of me now. And he is handling all the Facebook Live stuff and occasionally tossing in his dos pesos, Mr. Jose Sudden Death Valente. We're also streaming on the LV Sports Network. You can follow the show on Twitter at Adeline 1340 AM. And as I mentioned, you can watch us on Facebook. The page is called Adeline. That's OUTTALINE. The show is live, so callers are heard. The Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap is sponsored by our title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. On Tap, a bitter ending to the Vegas Golden Knights Stanley Cup playoff run. We go one-on-one with Braden McNabb, John Merrill, and Alex Tuck. Blue Jackets and Bobrovsky plus Nuggets and Jokic equal blazing. And Michael Babcock of TMZ Sports will guide us through Fact This. Plus, the new thing to do in town is go see AAA baseball in Summerlin. Hitting coach Eric Martins will join the Las Vegas Aviators report today, and we'll also talk a little NFL draft and thoughts on what's soon to be the Las Vegas Raiders. What did they do in the draft? We'll talk about it. I'm surprised. Are you? We'll find out. Hey, What's on Tap comes your way thanks to the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice. When looking for answers about home financing, check out cardinalfinancial.com.
Collision at the draw. There's a shot deflected away. We've got a whistle. Down to the ice goes one of the Sharks. No referee put his arm up to call a penalty, and there's blood on the ice.
Timo Meyer just walked up and punched Nate Schmidt in the face. Derek Englund is kind of gathering his group and keeping them calm. Pavelski is bleeding.
We're back in San Jose. The Sharks have just scored. It's a power play goal. San Jose gets a five-minute major on a blown call by the officials. Cody Eakin cross-checks Joe Pavelski, which is definitely a penalty. But instead of a two-minute minor, they've assessed Cody Eakin a five-minute major power play, a major penalty. LeBanc on the right side. LeBanc puts it up the wall to Erik Karlsson. Seven assists in the playoffs. Shoots! Score! Tipped in by Hurdle. And it's a one-goal game, and the power play will continue for San Jose. LeBanc twisting it out to the point. Burns to his left. Couture shoots! He scores! Logan Couture ties the game. The third power play goal on this major advantage.
Right point, LeBanc, top of the right circle, cruises in, he shoots, he scores!
Kevin LeBanc, four power play goals on the major advantage. San Jose takes the lead.
Hard to listen to, man. Watched it live, as we all did, still a bit surreal. And, you know, I put away my crying towel a couple of days ago. I've heard a lot of different people chiming in about the way the season ended. And, you know, it's kind of split down the middle. It really is. The more people I talk to, you have people that are the school of thought is, well, you know what? I mean, they had a 3-1 series lead. They couldn't close it out. They did have a 3-1 lead when they went on that the five-minute major penalty, and where the Sharks did score four goals. So, I mean, what was done about that? And I'm just going to say this, and Chris, Jose, you guys are welcome to chime in eventually. I do want to get this out. And look, here's the deal. The Golden Knights earned seven games. Stop saying they should have won it in game 6. They should have won it in Game 7. At least some people give them Game 5 and say, you know what, you can understand they're up 3-1. They go to San Jose, and in the back of all of their minds, I don't care what anyone says out there, yes, do you want to close out the series whenever you can? Absolutely. That is the number one goal. But I think in the back of every one of their minds, they had 3 games to only win 1, and the one thing the Golden Knights still have not done is win a series at home. So I think the thought in Game 5 is nobody really was that bummed when they lost Game 5. I was worried. I was watching it. I was at Big Dog's Brewery on Rancho watching the game, and I was worried when they lost Game 5. I truly was. And I said last week, if you remember in the studio, me and Chris at the end of the show, when JT the Brick came across and asked us what our thoughts were on the game. Both Chris and JT said they thought the Knights would win. I wanted to say it. And I said I thought the Knights would lose a close one. They lost by 1 in double overtime. That's a pretty close one. But the bottom line is this. In Game 6, the Golden Knights had almost 60 shots. Well, they did have over 60 shots on goal. But I think 59 saves for Martin Jones. He has never made 59 saves, probably back to his peewee hockey days. He decides to have the best game of his career in Game 6 at T-Mobile Arena. So you're going to blame the Golden Knights and say they should have closed it out, that it took the double overtime for the Sharks to finally win? Please, stop it. Okay? They did all they could in that game. And Game 7 also went to overtime. And they were winning that game handily 3-0 until one of the worst calls was made in NHL playoff history. I'm sorry, it was. Was that the entire reason they lost the series? Absolutely not. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying that if you look at and you take all of the factors and combine them and think about it, all of a sudden you have Joe Pavelski. Let's be real. I mean, the guy's been around forever. One of the most beloved players amongst other players in the National Hockey League. The guy goes down, and he's bleeding from the head. Now, unlike T-Mobile Arena, when the players exit the rink to go to their locker rooms, they go across the ice. They go in a different entrance. So the players don't get a chance to see exactly what happened to Joe Pavelski as he exits the ice. And if I'm the coaching staff, you know what I say to those Sharks players? I say, guys, Cody Eakin just hammered Joe Pavelski. Oh, my God. Get them even more fired up. Meanwhile, the Golden Knights are watching Cody Eakin walk off the ice, kind of discombobbled, like, what the hell just happened? Not only that, let's take into account you are losing one of your best penalty killers, a gnat in Cody Eakin, who is so disruptive on the penalty kill that that's what people call attention to when they talk about number 21 of the Vegas Golden Knights. So you have to take him off of the table for a 5-minute major penalty kill. Are we taking that into account when we're talking about the Vegas Golden Knights should have done something to kill this penalty off? That one of the guys that's been doing it all year is gone. The bottom line is, until probably they got in the locker room for overtime, nobody knew exactly what happened with Joe Pavelski. And let me tell you this right now, people. You want to know how to fix this. Now, I know that they're going to change the rule, and they are going to go to Toronto, just like they do for every goal before a player can be ejected. If there is any kind of controversy, they're going to find a way to go to Toronto and make somebody make the call because it is too big of a situation, especially in the postseason. And I'm going to give you that also, that it's too big of a call. But you know how you make this simple, Chris? It's real simple. A stick leaves a flipping mark. I've been playing hockey since I was knee-high to a damn toadstool. If you get hit across the face with a stick, it leaves a mark. Can the officials just walk up to Joe Pavelski, look at the guy's face, and say, wow, he's not cut anywhere. There's not a mark on his face. How easy would that have been to just take a look at the guy and realize, wow, he wasn't cross-checked in the face? Because the initial assessment and what was told to Gerard Gallant and the bench of the Vegas Golden Knights was that he was cross-checked in the face. Then the story changes. Van Housmisen, or whatever the hell his name was, the lead official, says, you know what? It was the violence of the injury, or the intent, the way he cross-checked him. He changed the story afterwards. But that's not what the Golden Knights were told immediately after the injury, immediately after the supposed cross-check. And if you talk to a bunch of guys throughout the thing, people in the know, they will tell you it wasn't even a cross-check. That 60% of face-offs, a guy shoves another guy out of the way to get him away from the front of the net, maybe to retain possession of the puck. But it happens all the time. It just so happened. Here's what happened. This is it. Joe Pavelski took a bad fall. The way he fell and the fact he ran into Paul Stastny, he took a bad fall. And he landed awkwardly, and it worked out very well for his team. That's the bottom line. It's not what caused this entire series to collapse. But let's be real. If that even is just a two-minute cross-checking penalty, which it shouldn't have been, they score one goal. They score one goal, and they're back to even strength. The Golden Knights were shell-shocked, people, and that's why they gave up four goals. They didn't know what the hell was happening, and the Sharks had two. They didn't just go up a gear. They went up two gears because they thought, not only do we have an opportunity to close the gap with half a period to go, but our leader, Joe Pavelski and Joe Thornton are their leaders, is hurt. And he was violently hurt by one of the Golden Knights. And that's what's going through their minds at that time, which brought him up two gears. No way, guys. That caused the loss of Game 7. I won't say it lost the series. It lost Game 7.
You know, I was there, and that's the first time I've listened to the I won't even call them highlights, to the goals since that game. I my positioning was I couldn't see what happened because I was at the far end of the ice behind the net. And behind Martin Jones on the complete opposite end of the ice. Never saw a replay until overtime when I saw tweets tweeting out what actually happened. My initial thought was, wow, that was a really dumb play by Cody Eakin. I can't believe he would do something so stupid. A few minutes later, I started getting text messages from people here, people back home. What an absolutely disgusting call. What a terrible call. The officials screwed Vegas. I had no idea because they never showed a replay. What happened was Pavelski goes down. Right away, the fans at the SAP Center start throwing crap on the ice because they're a disgraceful fan base up there. I don't care what they say. They're a joke, the Sharks fans. Nasty, disgusting people. They start throwing stuff on the ice. They stop play. Joe Thornton.
Lobbying.
Who got away in Game 3 with a cheap shot on Tomas Nosek.
No question.
Should have been thrown out of the game right then and there. Granted, he was suspended. I felt one game probably justified, but he should have been tossed. He gets in the official's face, and he starts yelling and screaming. Timo Meier throws a punch at Nate Schmidt. You heard Gary Lawless talking about it at the end there. These two refs, you know what it was? They were intimidated by Joe Thornton and the San Jose crowd. They cracked under pressure. Dan O'Halloran, he's refereed 10 straight conference finals. He's one of the best refs in the NHL.
Intimidated.
Done. His playoffs are over. This is his last season.
Is that, he retiring?
Yeah, he's done.
He's going to retire after this.
He's
right?
Retired. Yeah. It's over. Dan O'Halloran will never ref another NHL game again unless he decides to unretire.
You almost want to unretire. You want to go out with that one? That's a hell
guys,
of a black guy to go out with.
Those guys cracked under the pressure. Mm-hmm. They were intimidated. Yep. For the second time in the series, the officials at the SAP Center had absolutely no clue what happened on a play because in Game 5, they called Marchessault for a high stick that knocked the teeth out of Logan Couture. You know what? It's a penalty. There's no doubt about it. It's a penalty. But they didn't see it. You can't call what you don't see. It's in the rule book.
That's crazy, right?
None of them saw what happened on that play in Game 5. They reacted to Logan Couture acting like he was hit by a car. And I hear, well, you have two teeth knocked out. I'm not going to throw my gloves and stick up in the air and act like I just got run over by a semi.
I got shot. Wow.
That guy deserves, he's not good enough for an Academy Award, but definitely a People's Choice for Logan Couture. George McPhee took a shot, I think, because you don't want to guess with George, but he made a comment about how his team plays. We don't embellish was something that he said. I think that's a direct shot, or maybe it's not, at those guys up in San Jose who every play act like it's the end of the world. And guess what happened? In Game 1 against Colorado, Brendan Dillon actually did cross-check somebody in the face. And these buffoons got it right. They called two double minors. San Jose killed both of them. And their salty Twitter handle, they tweeted out, see, you can kill a 4-minute penalty. Completely
different. That's what my whole point is. It is a matter of, and you know, you brought up somebody in, that was manhandled in game three or four, Jonathan Marchessault. But I want to say about Jonathan Marchessault, what a tremendous goal. And you want to talk about one of the most resilient players in the National Hockey League. This guy just simply finds a way. And, you know, it's all justified because it's just so funny that they weren't calling penalties the majority of game. I was really enjoying the way the game was being called. They were letting Game 7 be dictated by the play up until that time. And then at the end of the game, to try to make it up and to try to get the Golden Knights to tie it, the officials thought they got bailed out for a minute because they call a crappy penalty on the Sharks at the end of the game. I mean, it was a penalty, but it was one you call in the regular season, not in the postseason.
Well, here's the reality.
It was a makeup call to try to get the Golden Knights the equalizer. They wanted it so badly, they wanted that equalizer.
The reality is, if you're a San Jose Sharks fan, you have zero right from here on out until the entire existence of your life to chant, "Ref, you suck." The refs bailed you out.
Oh my God.
Because you were, listen, I was in the building 12 minutes ago. There were people in front of me yelling, "You suck. You guys do this to us every year. Why do you continue to lose in the playoffs?" They knew. Their fans knew the game was over.
Yeah.
And then the refs bailed them out. To me, you cannot guess. You absolutely, and you know what? You can be right about the Golden Knights shouldn't have given up four goals. You can be right about that.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, what you should be more pissed about is not that the Golden Knights gave up the four goals. You should be pissed about the fact that the NHL refs, the best league in the world,
wrote history.
Changed the course of history.
They wrote history.
Because they cracked under pressure. They had zero clue what happened. They saw Joe Pavelski, who by all accounts is a good guy. So I don't, and it sounds like he's going to be okay, which is a great thing. They saw him laying on the ice.
Bleeding. From the head.
And these two buffoons had no idea what was going on.
They panicked.
That's exactly right.
They panicked
because Joe Thornton was in their face, and these idiots behind them were throwing garbage onto the ice. Not only on the ice, near where Pavelski was laying.
I know. It's crazy. You know, the thing is, though, again, how simple would it have been? I understand you're caught up in the moment, and it is a big moment. But how simple would it have been to just go take a look at Joe Pavelski and see the injury came in the back of his head? He was wearing his helmet.
Well,
it cut himself through his helmet.
I have a theory about that. And my theory is, did you happen to notice what Joe Pavelski's wearing on his face? He has a mask.
He's got a mask on, too.
He's got a mask on. My theory is that where the mask screwed in to his helmet, where he hit his head was where there was a screw. And I believe that the screw is what cut him.
Cut a hole in his head. I'm not disagreeing with you, because it had nothing to do with anything Cody Eakin or Paul Stastny did.
And that's the other thing. Period. I was on the air in Winnipeg, TSN 1290 in Winnipeg, the very next day. And they asked me, basically, Paul Stastny is apparently being villainized in some places. And my reply was, well, we saw the play. Cody lost the draw. Pavelski backed up. I think he probably lost balance when Eakin shoved him. You could see it. By the way, that does happen on a lot of faceoffs. And he was losing his balance, and I think Stastny had no idea and was attempting to just get out to the puck and get on his man, and he tried to skate around Pavelski, so he pushed him out of the way. And because of the awkward way Pavelski was falling, I think Stastny ended up... I think if Stastny doesn't make contact with Pavelski, Pavelski probably gets right back up.
He does. The fall's definitely not
as... And they don't call a penalty. That's the other thing. If Pavelski gets right back up on that play...
There's no penalty.
There's no stoppage. He probably gets right back up and continues playing. The whole thing was garbage. The league should be ashamed. And then I saw Peter DeBoer, who is kind of a salty guy anyway... You hear what his comments were when he said that when he was asked about the league apologizing to Vegas? Bro, you have a tainted win.
Yes.
Your win is tainted.
It is.
You should shut up because you have zero right to talk about the officiating in that series because you could say, well, at the end of the day, the calls even down. No, they didn't. They did not. because Vegas had a series stolen from them by the NHL.
You were given a game. It was a six-game series.
So Peter DeBoer should shut up.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, listen, we do got to go to break. I want to let you know, coming back on the other side, we're going to talk some pretty cool blazing. As I mentioned before, we'll talk about that. And also Michael Babcock. I got a chance to meet this guy Thursday night on a show I did at another station down the dial. And what a good guy, man. TMZ Sports. The bottom line is with TMZ Sports, what I've learned, you know, at first some of the stories that would break with them, I would think, you know, this is crap, man. I mean, these guys, this is the National Enquirer of events. It's not. they pay a lot of money for the stories that you hear about.
The reality is they're doing the job that the NFL should be doing in terms of policing their players.
110%. Michael Babcock's got some good things. Good things to talk about. I don't think
be confused with Toronto Maple Leafs coach Mike Babcock.
No. You know, it's funny because when Mike Babcock, he goes by Michael, which is smart. But, you know, pretty interesting stuff. And obviously one of the things that's been trending on TMZ over the past week or so, Tariq Hill, really, I don't want to say breaks my heart. That'd be a bad analogy. But it sickens me and it does hurt. Because things that hurt are when you see individuals that were blessed with just incredible talent and incredible skills. I don't even want to talk about it. It just sucks because to me, they do the entire world, sports world, a disservice because they take away their talents from all of us. When they get kicked out of a league or they get suspended, we don't get to watch them play. And that's where we all suffer for it because I don't want to sit and point fingers and say, this guy's terrible. Man, I love sports. I want to see the best players in the world compete at the highest level. And that's what our major professional sports do for us. When a guy gets suspended for any reason, it takes that away from us. This guy's a piece of junk, but he has got a talent that is truly special. We'll talk about that. Again, we've got Blazin a little bit later on down the road. Eric Martin's the hitting coach of the Las Vegas Aviators to talk about what's going on out at the Las Vegas ballpark. They're out there again today at noon. All that and more here out of line, Fox Sports Radio.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why, this is why, this is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why, this is why, this is why I'm hot. I'm hot cause I'm fly. You ain't cause you not. This is why, this is why.
This is why I'm hot. Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango. In the Montecito Crossing Plaza, they've got two happy hours every single day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. They are a long three-pointer away from Centennial Hills Hospital. Come on out there Monday night during the football season. We are out there hosting the best Monday night football party in Las Vegas, giving away replica jerseys, wing parties, all kinds of cool stuff, and that'll be during football season. Again, I think this is our sixth year in a row out there. Pretty cool. Blazin', well, there's a couple things Blazin'. How about Nikola Jokic? I mean, are you kidding me? This guy is just sick. He's a monster game last night in Game 7 as the Denver Nuggets took out the San Antonio Spurs. 21 points, 15 boards, and 10 assists. A triple-double, but what's so impressive about that triple-double is he did it without turning the ball over once. Now, there's only six players in NBA history, him being the sixth, that have done that. And all five of the other ones are guards. A couple of Hall of Famers like Magic Johnson in there. But this is a center. And to not turn the ball over in that series against the Spurs, by the way, Jokic, 162 points, 85 rebounds, and 65 assists in seven games. No one has ever done that. And the last guy to have a triple-double in a Game 7 was LeBron James in 2016 when the Cavaliers won the NBA title. I mean, it's the first time Denver's won a Game 7 in a playoff series since 78. I don't think they've advanced since, like, 2008. Big thing for them, but I'll tell you right now, this 24-year-old Serbian kid is one of the best players in the National Basketball Association. If you're not familiar with him, watch his game. It is truly exceptional for a guy that big to have that kind of game is truly exceptional. And I'll tell you right now, the Denver Nuggets, they're going out in the next round. They will. But they're an exciting basketball team to watch. And also blazing is You know, those Columbus Blue Jackets, man. I said before a puck was dropped in the National Hockey League playoffs 2 weeks ago that the Columbus Blue Jackets would beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm not going to keep harping on that because I definitely didn't predict it in a four-game sweep. I don't think anybody did because I don't think there was a bet made on that. But I did think they'd win it.
But you called it, though. All that matters. So you got to get the credit for something you called. Straightforward. Hey, I mean, come on now.
Well, the whole thing is that they continue to exceed. I really feel, and I still feel, that even though I think the Blue Jackets match up well against the Boston Bruins, I think in all the Boston Bruins are probably the best team left in the playoffs, even though I don't think they're going to win the Cup. I don't even think they're going to go to the Cup.
Even after what you saw last night?
Yeah, well, even after what I saw last night, but I love what I'm seeing. And like I said, Blazin, I mean, Sergei Bobrovsky is absolutely on fire, and it's the reason that I thought Columbus would win the first round over the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Seth Jones, you want to talk about the complete package as a defenseman? This guy is big, strong, can handle the puck, and seems to be a part of every big goal they have, and yet he's a defenseman. He is truly, right now at least, in my opinion, one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League. He's pretty cool. Both those guys are blazing. The Denver Nuggets blazing with a big Game 7 win and in the playoffs. And also, I'm not going to bring him up again. I talked about Giannis last week, but the bottom line is, if you don't think the Milwaukee Bucks can win the NBA East, because no one seems to think they have a prayer, you've got another thing coming. They can absolutely win the East. He is that good. I think the Raptors will end up winning the East simply because Kawhi Leonard having his best season, but I'm still do not count out Milwaukee. I got to get Mike Babcock on, sitting on hold. Appreciate you, brother. Got to meet this guy, as I mentioned, on Thursday night doing a show down the dial, and we had some good banners, some good fun, and except for I wasn't real thrilled with some of the stories we had to talk about, of course, Tariq Hill, and we'll start there. Mike, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Oh, absolutely, man. We'll start with the story we talked about on Thursday again, Tariq Hill. As the weekend's gone on, it's made me more and more sick to my stomach. And the main reason is you know, I'm getting really fed up with these stories that we have to keep hearing that these guys are that out of control. And there's nothing that can be done about it, and we keep breaking stories like this. But what's really sickens me when I think about it, Michael, more and more, it's the fact that this guy has such mad skills, and I got a feeling it might get taken away from us. And I really hate when a guy is in the peak of his career, has something special to offer, and, you know, you got to punish him, but punishing him punishes all of us, right?
Right, yeah. As a fan, you're upset with him because we love watching this guy. Like you said, he's special. There's nobody else like him in the league. And it at least seems like it's trending in the direction that this guy is at least going to miss some football this season, if not the entire season. Because when you listen to that tape, that 11-minute tape, it's you know, we've seen some bad ones. We've seen Ray Rice. You know, we've seen Kareem Hunt. And I think a good argument could be made that that this is the worst because you're dealing with a 3-year-old kid here.
No, you really are. And Mags, do me a favor. Hit fact this for me right now because I want to get Mike involved in this. But go ahead.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. Donald Trump attempted to link himself to Nick Bosa via Twitter on Thursday. If you don't know, I should say, try to link yourself to Twitter. If you don't know, on Thursday, Nick Bosa was the second player taken by the San Francisco 49ers in the 2019 NFL Draft. And again, this is Michael Babcock, not to be mistaken for NHL hockey coach Mike Babcock of TMZ Sports, to make sense of that fact. To go ahead and talk about that a little bit, because now we have apparently a big Trump supporter went second in the draft, and of all teams, the San Francisco 49ers.
Right. If we know anything about Donald Trump, he likes people who like him, and Nick Bosa has been a Donald Trump supporter for a while now. Recently, he scaled it back a little bit once I think it became clear to him that he was probably going to wind up in San Francisco, which we know is a little bit of a left-leaning place. So he scaled back the Trump stuff. But, you know, Trump is well aware that Nick Bosa is a fan of his. And I thought it was pretty predictable that once Nick Bosa gets drafted second, that Donald Trump, you know, hits up Twitter and sends the message of congratulations out to Bosa.
You know, I'm just really scared that we're going to see an address soon, and Trump's going to be wearing a San Francisco 49ers hat or something like that.
You would have never thought after, you know, with that being Colin Kaepernick's team, you never would have thought that he'd be wearing a 49ers jersey or hat. But who knows? It's possible. These guys seem to love each other.
Oh, God almighty. You know, just more news that I could do without, to be honest with you. Another story that's been trending on TMZ Sports. And if I was to say to you out there, and I'm going to let Michael Babcock take it from here, but I was to say that he says he's a Hall of Famer for sure. For sure. Guys, are you listening to this? And he says he's the fastest player ever. Chris, if I was to say to you before I put Michael Babcock and remind him, if I was to say this guy just says he's an NFL player, a recently retired NFL player. Is he retired, Michael, before we say who he is?
Not officially, but
pretty much he's done. But he says he's a Hall of Famer for sure, and he's the fastest player ever. Who do you think I would be talking about?
Chris Johnson.
Well, you've heard the story.
He played for the Jets. Of course I know who he is.
Okay, yeah.
Correct. Yeah, he was a running. What did he run, like a 4.3, 40 or something?
Very,
like
very, very four fast. 4.24 at the combine. But the question is, a Hall of Famer for sure? Because he had one 2,000-yard season?
Well, he was a pretty good running back.
For 3 years? And that's a Hall of Famer?
He's not a Hall of Famer.
I'm going to have to look deeper, but I think you can't throw away the 2,000-yard season in an era where running backs were kind of, you know, the game changed to being a more pass-happy style and system. So, I mean, for a guy to run, I mean, how many guys do you think can run for 2,000 yards today?
Not a lot.
Well, that's my point.
Okay,
not many. He doesn't have, the negatives are, he doesn't have 10,000 yards. He only has 55 touchdowns. But I think for a two-year period, probably, without going back and looking at the numbers, he was probably the best running back in the league. He was explosive. I'd rather put a guy like him in as opposed to a guy like Frank Gore, who I think is more of a compiler, and Frank Gore is a lock to make the Hall of Fame if you look at his numbers. But I think, Chris, for that period of time, I think he has a pretty good argument.
Well, and you could also look, in 2009 he was the NFL Offensive Player of the Year, three-time Pro Bowler. He had 9,600 yards rushing, 2,500 yards from scrimmage, which is the NFL record. I mean, it's one of those things where I think his numbers are better than Terrell Davis's. Terrell Davis is in the Hall of Fame.
Right. If you're going to put Terrell Davis in for a couple spectacular seasons, then why not Chris Johnson? Because, like you said, the numbers are better.
He had a Super Bowl MVP.
He also had John Elway as his quarterback. Name one quarterback that Chris Johnson had.
Just saying, I think the couple of years that Terrell Davis shined in the National Football League were a little bit more polished than the years that Chris Johnson had. However, I'm going to say Chris Johnson, as Michael just said and as you're saying, for about 2 years, he was one of the top, if not the top player picked in most fantasy football drafts.
Oh, in an era where it was more of a passing offense.
It was. I have trouble saying that Chris Johnson is a Hall of Famer. Technically, John Ross does own the combine record. If you want to get technical, I'm not going to say he's
Chris
fast.
Johnson says. By the way, Chris Johnson says that was something that was like contrived with the NFL, that they wanted the record to be broken, so they allowed John Ross, and essentially cheated to allow John Ross to break his record.
A conspiracy theory. I mean, oh my goodness. Well, you know, like I said, there's no doubt Chris Johnson for a couple of years was electrifying. I just don't see Hall of Fame stats. And the one thing where I'll disagree with you a little bit, Michael, is I think when it comes to professional sports, especially like the NFL, which we all know the old satire is not for long.
Right.
I think compiling stats does warrant a trip to Canton, because to compile stats, you have to make it for long. And
sure,
it is a very tough league. So when a guy like Frank Gore at a position like running back, which is traditionally a maybe 3 to 4 year career position on average, you got to give the guy credit. Does Frank Gore, now when you say skills as a Hall of Famer, I would agree with you 100%. Chris Johnson had better skills than Frank Gore. But compiling stats in the National Football League, you compile them over a decade. Man, you just to survive a decade
in the
National Football League, go to the Hall of Fame.
The numbers need to be there. But in the Hall of Famer, at least my my kind of the way I evaluate these things are, was this guy the best in his position, you know, in the league? And when I look at Frank Gore, I don't see that. When I look at Chris, I do see that. And that's kind of one of the things I like to tick off when I'm looking at somebody and trying to decide if they're a Hall of Famer.
Nope, I like it. I like it a lot. I think that's a pretty good thing. And one other thing I want to talk about on an interesting note, Dirk Nowitzki on vacation recently in Mexico.
Yeah, look, Dirk looks pretty good.
I
don't know if we ever wanted to see Dirk with his shirt off, but you know, whether or not we did, we saw it, and I thought he looked pretty good.
He's retired.
He's with his wife.
Yeah,
he's 40 years old. He looks great.
He looks like he could still play to me. I mean, I'll tell you right now, you know, the guy's big, and if Chura can still play in the National Hockey League at 42, why can't Dirk keep going?
I think we've seen it. He could still play if he wants to. I think he's played for a few decades.
Yeah, he's made enough money. I think the only way you're getting Dirk back is he said, "Here, Dirk, here's the deal. You want one more ring? We're gonna make you the 14th player on the Golden State Warriors bench." and I think if they told him that, he might come back just to compile another ring. But other than that, yeah, I think Dirk is done. But you are right, man. For a 40-year-old body, that's not looking too bad.
Not bad. He looks like he's having a good time. He deserves it. So I'm glad he's out there having fun with his wife.
He is Michael Babcock, TMZ Sports. Michael, we're going to definitely have to do this more often, man, and really enjoy talking to you. I've been a big fan of TMZ for a while. You guys, like I said, you know, you guys get the dirt before anyone else, and it's not so much the dirt. It's just about justifying things around professional sports. You can't run, you can't hide from TMZ. It just is. It's the truth, and you can't hide, and you can't run. And you guys find them all the time. You enlighten me. I will say that over the past couple of years, TMZ Sports has probably hurt me more than any other media outlet, only because you guys tell me things that, you know, it's one of those things where you want to put your hands over your ears a lot of times and say, la, 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 but we got to know, man. We just got to know.
Yeah, no, I have the same reaction. It's some of these things you don't want to hear, you don't want them to be true, but, you know, if they happen, you report on it. But I appreciate those compliments, Brian.
Oh, well, absolutely, Mike. I'm just waiting for 2 years from now. I want you guys to be the first ones to break when my Detroit Lions go 0-16 again in 2 years and draft Trevor Lawrence. I want you guys to break that's going to happen before anyone else, you know? That's all I'm hoping for.
I'd love to have Trevor Lawrence on the Giants. But anyway.
Hey, like I said, I just want you to call attention to this somewhere because I've been screaming about it forever. People say, you know, the Lions, I just saw when the Pistons recently achieved another record of futility by losing 14 straight NBA playoff games, the first team to ever do that, to add to the many dubious records in Detroit professional sports history. You know, people say, well, the first thing they put up was the Lions haven't won a playoff game since 1991. That was the thing they put up there. I want this put in perspective because being a Detroit Lions fan, the Detroit Lions in the Super Bowl era, when Browns fans want to start whining about how bad they had it for a little while, and they tied our dubious record of 0-16. The Browns have played in, I believe, 4 AFC championship games since the Super Bowl era has began. Put this in perspective. The Detroit Lions in the Super Bowl era have won one playoff game. One.
Wow.
Take a look at that. People need to talk more about it when you talk about the most inept professional sports franchises. They won an NFL championship with Bobby Lane as their quarterback in 1957 before Super Bowls were even talked about. Since the era, one more time, one Super Bowl victory. You think we're pretty bitter in Detroit? Like I said, when people tell me, oh, this, that, and the other, when you're a Detroit Lions fan, you don't feel sorry for anybody else, Michael. You feel sorry for yourself.
Right. The narrative out there, you don't hear the Lions. You hear the Browns are the most inept franchise. That's incredible. One playoff win.
Take a look at it. One playoff win. They beat the Dallas Cowboys to go to the Super Bowl. And here's the crazy thing about a great trivia question. Who was the quarterback? We know Barry Sanders was in his second year out of Oklahoma State, but who was the starting quarterback in the one playoff victory? See if you can get that one. Real tough.
Oh, man. What's the answer?
The answer is a guy who put a gun in his mouth and tried to blow his brains out a few years back, Eric Kramer.
Wow.
Eric Kramer, who ended up going to the Bears, but we had the quarterback trilogy with the Detroit Lions. We had Eric Kramer, Rodney Peet, and Andre Ware. And and that was our beautiful trilogy. We went to the NFC Championship game on a 12-4 season the year Mike Utley got paralyzed, and Mark Rippon and the Redskins. Like I said, it's too bad that the Lions weren't wearing yellow pants that day because Eric Kramer wet himself a couple times. But that's
what was that, like 91?
The 91 season. It was early January of 92. Of course, I'll never forget it. I was actually in the Pontiac Silverdome for that historic game. But again, my dad keeps asking me, you know, Brian, am I going to see a Super Bowl before I leave this planet? And I'm really sad he's 81 years old. It's an emphatic no. A better question is, Dad, I'm 56. Will I see a Super Bowl before I leave this planet? And the scary thing is, Michael, I think the answer is still an emphatic no.
Well, if you're not happy with Matt Stafford, we got to get you a quarterback. Now I'm rooting for the Lions. I had no idea.
Yeah, well, I wanted to give you a tidbit, something you can delve into over there and
like
start talking and just start creating some urgency for Detroit to do something to give us another. I just want another playoff win. Is that asking too much?
Right, not even a Super Bowl. Jeez.
Seriously, if I ever Super Bowl, I'm going to get struck by lightning. So, hey, he is Michael Babcock, TMZ Sports. Appreciate you, my friend. We'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, Brian.
Absolutely. Listen, let's take a real quick break. We will be coming back on the other side with the hitting coach, hitting instructor of the Las Vegas Aviators. Going into yesterday's game, batting .305, second in the Pacific Coast League, behind the team they're playing right now, the El Paso Chihuahuas. Eric Martins with Out of Line when we come back. About 10 minutes in front of 9 o'clock Sunday morning. You are listening to Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM here in the Cardinal Financial Fox Sports Studios. We are now time for the Las Vegas Aviators Report. We do that every week during the season. Appreciate their sponsorship and appreciate what they're doing out in Summerlin. The first year that they are playing professional baseball out in Summerlin at one of the most, I'll say, prestigious, nicest ballparks I have seen in minor league. I've been to 25 minor league ballparks in my life. I've never seen one like I've seen out in downtown Summerlin. What they have put together, the Howard Hughes Corporation funding, and a long time dream of Donnie Logan. So nice to see happen out there. And joining us now on the show, and the hitting coach of the Las Vegas Aviators, a team that was smoking hot, started the season, I believe, 15-4. But they've lost their last four games, and you know, just figures. You know, and by the way, Eric Martins, welcome to join the show. .305 batting average, and there's only one team you're behind. It's the team that is leading the Pacific Coast League Pacific Southern Division. And if it wasn't for them, you guys would be in first place, leading the whole thing. They're up a half a game now after four straight losses.
they've been playing pretty good. You know, we've kind of flipped the script a little bit. We went in there at the beginning of the year, and everything that they're doing against us, we did against them. So, and that's just the game of baseball. You know what I mean? We started off on fire and hit well, and they've come in and they're playing well. And baseball is a game of momentum, and you know that team's playing well right now, and we're fine. We'll be okay. You know, they come in here and they put up some numbers, and it's probably a little bit of payback of what we did to them at the beginning of the year. So. You know, it's fun to watch, though. It's going to be some good competition throughout the season.
You guys did come out like a house on fire. And, you know, I had Fran Riordan on the show 2 weeks ago talking about the same thing of coming out and just being smoking hot. I said, you know, is it part of the excitement of these guys knowing, I mean, my goodness, you come to a new city, and it's not just any city, it's Las Vegas. And secondly, you come and you find out, wow, we're going to be playing baseball in a $150 million ballpark. Most of these ballparks average between $50 and $100 million in minor league. And this 10,000-seat facility, I keep saying it's like it got under one of those devices. Like they just took, like, say, you know, a major league stadium and shrunk it down. How cool is it for this team, for you guys, for everyone to be playing there, Eric?
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, I can't thank Donnie enough. I mean, he did a fantastic job designing this in the Howard Hughes Corporation, and this place is immaculate. I mean, you guys see the outside of it, how beautiful it is outside. I mean, the amenities that we have as coaches and players underneath is top-notch. I mean, our hitting facility, our lounge, our the players' locker room, coach's office. I mean, everything down here is unbelievable. It's high-end. I mean, they did a great job, and just the fan and the support that we've had from the city has been unbelievable, and and it's a great place to be.
Every game's been a sellout to this point. It's pretty cool, and if you haven't been down there, there's so many things to entertain you. Not just walking around the ballpark and seeing a state-of-the-art facility, but you know, you've got the pool out in center field, and there is nothing like it. I tell people all the time, you got to check out Finn the Bat Dog. Have you ever seen anything like that, Eric, before you got to Vegas? Have you ever seen a dog retrieve bats like Finn?
You know what? Coming in and playing against the 51s at Cashman, we got to see Finn, which was pretty awesome, you know. And running around these little couple minor league cities here and there, they'll have one come in for a day or so. But to have one for our own personal bat dog, it's awesome. It's such a great dog, such, so full of energy. You can tell he loves what he does. And I love how the fans support him. And it's unbelievable. It's a great deal. It really is.
No, it's huge. On media day, I got a chance to have him. I stood right in front of a bat, and the trainer had him come and go back and forth. And just incredible. I'm like, man, I want one of those. Talk to me about this team, Eric. You got these guys batting over 300 cumulatively right now, as we mentioned briefly. And you've got some pretty decent prospects down here, hitting prospects as well as a few pretty decent pitching prospects.
Yeah, it's a fun team. You know, we came out, and, like you said, like gangbusters and on fire. And quite honestly, coming into the season, I didn't think we were going to have this much power, but I knew we were going to have some guys that can drive the baseball and probably have a little bit more extra base. We have some good speed on this team, and we have some exciting players. I mean, it starts at the top with Jorge Mateo. I mean, he gets on, and he's fun to watch run when he hits balls in the gap. And, you know, he's been doing a good job of setting the tone this year, having good at-bats and getting us going. And then we have guys like Dustin Fowler and Seth Brown, who's been doing an outstanding job. We got the veterans and Mark Payton and Eric Campbell and Dustin Fowler. I mean, this whole team, you don't get a break when we sit a couple guys. And that's the thing about it. We have such good depth that we can sit a couple guys, and the next guys step up, and they do well on top of that. So, I mean, it's been fun to watch. It's been fun to get out here and watch these guys get after it. They're really working hard at their craft, which is, for me as a hitting coach, is what you want to see. They can be sitting there and just being like, well, we're raking right now. We don't need to work. No, these guys are in here early. You know, I don't know if a lot of people understand. I mean, we take batting practice about 3:45, 4:15, and these guys are in here at 1 o'clock getting ready and getting, we're getting some swings in underneath in the cage and working on certain things. So it's been fun to watch these guys work and see the production that they've been having. So it's awesome.
The harder they work, the more it's going to hurt you at the end of the season as they get called up to the big club when you guys are fighting for a playoff spot. And that's the biggest challenge I've always said for minor league baseball is, you know, when you put together a good team and, you know, you're still trying to win. You're still trying to win a championship at every level. And the Oakland A's, one of the teams that I've given a great deal of credit to always, they really care at every level and they want you to win. So awfully challenging when you get into that to late August and September, and especially if the big league club is in contention, they start bringing up all these guys to take a look at it and hamstring you guys when you're making a playoff run.
No, you're absolutely right. You hit it on the head. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, our ultimate goal is to get guys to the big leagues. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Oakland does such a good job in the minor league system because they do emphasize winning. And that's the thing that we try to do, especially AAA. You know, you have prospects, but you bring in some free agents, and you want guys that are going to help not only the club that's in the city that you're playing in, but the big league club. So I look at it as one of those things. If the big league team is playing well and we're playing well, maybe they won't need those guys as much or so quick, so we'll have a chance down here. But if the big league team is not playing well and our guys are playing well down here, then, you know, they're going to call these guys up. And that's one thing Oakland does. They don't care who you are. You come in, you perform, you're going to get your opportunity to play in the big leagues.
That's really cool, and that's what it's all about. Again, we are talking to Eric Martins, the hitting instructor for the Las Vegas Aviators, the AAA franchise of the Oakland Athletics. And before I let you go, Eric, I got to ask you, so you're in Vegas now, you're up in Summerlin, you guys really just, man, it's almost like hitting a jackpot, no pun intended, getting to play in such a beautiful facility right next to City National Arena, another gorgeous facility put up here in the last couple years. What have you found? What do you like most about being in Vegas? What do you do in your spare time?
Well, we don't really have much spare time, so
very true.
One day off since we've been here, so we really haven't had a chance to explore. And on the day off, it was a travel day that we got back, and you know, we had a bus ride back in from Fresno after the game, so we didn't get into about 6 or 7 o'clock that morning. So that first day off was a day of laundry and sleep. So as we get back from the next road trip and we have the long homestand, that's when we'll be able to take advantage of the city. We have a couple We have a few day games with an off day coupled in there, so that's where you get to really get out there and explore. But, I mean, I really love it out here in Summerlin. I'm from California, so I've been to Vegas a lot. So for me to be out here, there's really no desire for me to go out to the Strip because Summerlin's so beautiful and there's so much to offer out here. I mean, you got the Red Rock and you got everything out here that, I mean, I love it out here. This is my cup of tea. And, you know, the support of the fans and just the people in general around here has been unbelievable. I mean, you go to the store or something like that and they'll see my placard from the team that we have to have in our parking lot. Oh, you with the Aviators. Oh, man, it's so awesome. I mean, the support has been fantastic. And, I mean, I can't wait for the days off. And maybe I'll venture off and see what I can get into. But, like I said, there's not too many of those days off where we get to enjoy. But I plan on that the next homestand.
We appreciate you, Eric Martins, hitting instructor for the Las Vegas Aviators. We are out of time. Eric, thanks for joining the show. We'll see you down at the Las Vegas ballpark. We are here every Sunday, same time, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman for Chris Chapman, for Jose Falonte. Appreciate Michael Babcock and Eric Martins. We're out. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.